Thank you for listening to Abstract Illusions Radio. With each breath of air, gain new insights and inspirations as we explore and expose the different aspects of the human experience. Now with your host, Jennifer Hillman. Good evening, everyone. This is Jennifer Hillman, and this is AIR, and Mercury retrograde is very much alive. Tonight's guest is Salvador Mensi. He does a wonderful job explaining the principles of feng shui. He has a book, Feng Shui Life Mapping, that is an innovative approach to manifesting your dreams through the ancient art of feng shui and the power of visualization. He is wonderful. He does in-home consultations. He has the book and a wonderful website, which is fengshuilifemapping.com. Hello, Salvador. How are you doing?
Ciao, Jennifer. I'm great. Thank you. How are you?
I'm doing good and just enjoying Mercury retrograde in all its glory.
Yeah.
You just got to just love it and say, life is good and we are back on the air.
Yeah.
And so we were talking about the basic principles of feng shui and that there is a map, a bagua, that really explains, and there are nine areas within it. So take it from there.
Right. In feng shui, we use what's called the bagua, or a map that's shaped like an octagon with the eight sides in the center giving us the nine quadrants that represent the nine energy centers of the house and the nine energy aspects of our life. And the idea is that as we can develop and nurture these areas, all of them equally, we can create a balance in our life and we can achieve the goals that we wish to achieve. And as a feng shui consultant, we use the bagua, laying the map over the blueprint of the house or over the room to identify what area of a person's space represents what area of that person's life. So we can then go to that area of the space and say, well, what in this area supports the intentions that I have for that area of my life? And I had a client that went to his house, and we went to his love and partnership area, and we found a tree that was dying. And ooh. I was like, so how does this support, you know, what you want in your love and partnership? And he immediately said, no, that's not what I want. And he pulled that out, and he put in a new tree afterwards. And so that's the way feng shui works. It's just identifying what's in your space that is supporting you positively moving forward, as opposed to things that are in your space that could be reminding you of the past or even energetically holding you down, such as, I know we talked a bit about clutter, but when we have clutter in our space, that creates an energetic vibration that's a little heavy, and it eats up a lot of our free energy, so that could be used to help propel us forward. So that's okay, kind of the basics.
Okay, my question is, I have an attached garage. Do you count that? Or is it just within the main house?
You know, the feng shui bagua can be placed over any area. So I could place the bagua with the eight and with the nine life areas over my desk. I could place it over a bedroom. I could place it over the whole house, including the garage. I can place it over the whole lot, including the garden and the sidewalks. It's up to you what space you want to put it over. As far as whether or not you include a space within the structure, there are basically three elements. You've got the roof line, you've got the foundation, and then you have the supporting walls. If the structure has two of those three elements, then you do include it in to the full function. It becomes a part of the main structure. So a lot of people have a patio or a deck or some sort of part that extends out into the yard or something like that. We would not include that as a part of the main structure of the house unless it had two of the three elements, whether it had the roof line continued over it, supporting walls, or the foundation running under it as well. Does that make sense? So I'd have to ask, is the roof line go over your garage or not?
Yes.
Okay.
And so does the foundation and the walls, for that matter.
So it would be included. The garage would be included. When you lay the bagua down over the blueprint of your house, you would include the garage in that blueprint.
Okay, so That's where my romance area is in my garage. What do you suggest?
Wow.
You suggest for that?
You know, it's a funny situation. So just so that I know that we're on the same page, when you're coming in the front door, if you were to look at the far right corner, so the furthest right portion of your space would be the garage?
Yes.
Okay. The challenging situation about having a love and partnership area in the garage is that it represents a lot of movement because cars are constantly in and out, in and out, in and out. What typically happens in these situations is that the person in the relationship, the partner, is typically gone from the house a lot or is absent because of so much movement. So what you'll want to do is create a really strong sense of stability and heavy, like something heavy and grounding in that space to really ground the energy. So I had another client who actually had this in the same situation where the garage was the love and partnership area. And what we did is we ended up putting some pretty heavy boulders just outside of the garage, on the outside of the garage wall, to represent a really heavy grounding energy in that space. And then we were very careful to create a very secure space. By secure, I mean that we didn't have clutter. She was using half of the garage just for junk, and we did away with that, and we decided to make sure that there was space for two cars. She also had a number of bikes. I think she had like 5 or 6 bikes. So what we did is we put the bikes in pairs to represent pairs of relationships and put those in there as well. And then we also put some chimes in there to create a soothing noise and a soothing sound to break up the engine sound. And we made sure that the window or the back door was opened on occasion so to let fresh air into it as well. So those are some of the things you can do. I'd have to see your space to look at it more specifically, but describe your garage to me. What's in there now?
Well, in that area right now, it's very stable storage shelves. I mean, they're rock solid in there.
Cool.
And I do have things stored there, but I have them in containers, so it's very neat. You don't really see what's in them. And they're also very heavy.
Okay.
But the thing is, a lot of it is stuff from the past. So now,
right.
I mean, that I'm just, I mean, don't want to be stuck in the past whatsoever. But at the same time, I mean, I have a 3-car garage. I'm very blessed with that. But at the same time, maybe I'm supposed to have a threesome. What do you think? Just kidding.
Why not?
Why not?
You know, but your comment is very valid. Those boxes are full of your past.
Right.
So it's really, it would be crucial that you go through and make sure that there aren't any energetic attachments within those boxes, especially to any previous relationships. That's kind of the first step I always give people when it comes to creating anything new in your life. You need to go ahead and go through and pull out anything that reminds you or carries the energetic vibration of your past and put it aside. In terms of relationships, like I can give an example. I went into a woman's bedroom because the bedroom represents your intimate relationships. And so she said she wanted a new relationship. We went into her bedroom area, and the first thing I noticed was this picture on her dresser of her and a guy on a ski slope. And I asked, "Who's the guy?" And she said, "Well, that's my ex." And I said, "Well, do you want to get back together with your ex?" And she said, "No." So I said, "You know, maybe it's not the best place to have a picture of your ex in your bedroom or in the love and partnership area of your house. Find another place in the house for that." And while I was talking to her, she was actually fidgeting with a bracelet that she was wearing, which was beautiful. And I said, "So tell me about the bracelet." And she said, "Because, well, my ex gave it to me. Do I have to get rid of it too?" And you know, I come up against this a lot with people, and it's like, there's nothing that you have to do in terms of feng shui. But it is an ideal situation that if you're wanting to create something new, then the idea is to give it as much space as possible. So any objects or elements that have the energetic vibration of an X need to be stored somewhere else or given away or gotten rid of altogether so that you can create the space for something entirely new. I like to say that if you have, let's say, 10 feet of space for a relationship in your life and you've got 3 feet of that space taken up with objects and bracelets and necklaces and shoes or whatever that were given to an ex, by an ex or are energetically related to that ex, then that's 3 feet less that any new person is going to be able to bring into a person's life. So in terms of your situation, I would just want to go out to those boxes and be really certain that there isn't any energetic vibration of a previous relationship represented in that. And then the second part, and I hope I'm not overwhelming you here, but the second part would just be to make sure that there's no nothing in those boxes that would represent like an unfinished project or something that would also have like something from your past that it's going to weigh you down. Do you know what I'm saying? So, like, unfinished projects tend to weigh us down because we still are attached to the completion of it because we haven't completed it or gotten rid of it. So if there's anything of that kind of nature, it would be best not kept, especially in the relationship area. It'd be better maybe in the creativity area, or it would be better just decided whether or not to get rid of it or finish it, kind of a thing to do.
Well, a lot of it is like tax papers.
Ah, so you want to date an accountant.
No. Tax papers, well, actually, an attorney, because I have, I had a lawsuit, and I have that stored, which I would love to just throw it away, but because of a lot of different reasons, I'm being told I can't do that. I had to hold on to these papers, and it's like, please, I just want to, but the funny thing is, it's a sexual harassment case.
That's, wow. Yeah, it would carry a lot of energy with it because it's got a lot of legal jargon and a lot of signatures and a lot of people's energies all going into that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would recommend one of two things. One, I'd either just get a storage unit someplace that you could store that stuff completely off-site, or B would be to place that those objects particularly in... trying to think of an area that it would be. I don't. When you go into your house, what is just to your left, just inside, like the front left corner from the door?
Family room. It's the living room. Actually, it's a pool room.
A pool room. Is there a space underneath it, like a crawl space or a space above it?
Not really.
Okay. Well, that's the skills and knowledge area, and that would be a more appropriate space to have something that you have gone through and you want to gain the knowledge from that experience in your life. Does that make sense? So let's do this. When you go into your garage, if you're facing the garage, if you're facing in the garage from the garage door, just inside to the left, is there space there that you could put those storage boxes?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I would put this, put them there. That way they're located within the life area that's referred to as skills and knowledge. And you can energetically gain all of the experience and all the positive value from all of those papers without it affecting relationships in other parts of your life.
Okay.
Cool.
Good deal.
Yeah.
My question is, though, it's like I had the living room, and then next to that is actually was the dining room, but I've made it my office.
So that's almost like in the very front of the house then, right?
Yeah, it is the front. It's right in the front of the house, but it is.
That's your career area, ironically. So it's an ideal place to have your office, especially if you like it.
Oh, I do. It's nice. It's airy, and it's very bright, and it's got good vibes. So that works out really, really well. So what other tips do you have for relationships? For example, my bedroom actually is my wealth room.
Awesome. Well, let's talk about the bedroom in a different sense. Instead of like, because we can look at the bedroom itself as representing one's intimate relationships, because it is where we spend the majority of our time. It's where we go into an unconscious state where we open up all of our energetic channels and allow ourselves to relax. And it's in those moments when we have the most opening heart and open to expressions of love and emotion. So bedrooms tend to have a very significant impact on a relationship. So let's just focus on the bedrooms for a little bit. The first thing that you want to do in your bedroom, again, is go through and eliminate anything that represents a previous relationship. I'm saying you, but in general, if anybody right. is sleeping on the mattress that they shared with their former spouse or with their former long-term relationship, it's time to get a new mattress, because that mattress carries the energetic vibrations of that ex on there, and that's very difficult to eradicate. But little things like that. The second thing I'd like to say is just what I call honoring the sacredness of the bedroom. It's the second step. I have five, but the first one is out with the old. Number two is honoring the sacredness of the bedroom. And what I mean by this is keeping the bedroom for the exclusive use of bedroom activities. Let me give you an example. I went to a client who asked me to help her to create or manifest a new relationship in her life. And when we got into the bedroom, what we found was this ginormous, like very oversized desk. It was huge, it was antique, it was beautiful, but it was too big for the room. And I asked her about it, and she said that it was something that somebody had given it to her, but she didn't have anywhere else in the house for it. And I was trying to help her see that bringing a desk into a bedroom is basically like bringing your work life into your relationship. Or in a relationship, you can think about oftentimes the work will get in the way of the relationship. So having such a large desk in there was creating this imbalance in her life where she was pretty much in a relationship with her work and not in a relationship with another person. So we wanted to move that out of there. Along that same lines, if you have an exercise bike or an exercise equipment in the bedroom, it's a funny situation because you're basically turning your relationship into a workout. And it's the worst kind of workout because you're actually not even getting anywhere. An exercise bike, it just goes in the same place over and over and over. So you're doing all this work, and yet you're still in the same place. So exercise bikes, not the best place to have them. And the last thing, of course, are televisions. You know, a lot of people like to watch TV from bed, and I'm not opposed to that. But if a TV is in the bedroom, ideally, it can be completely closed off, whether it's in a bureau or a cabinet or something of that nature, so that the bedroom becomes simply a bedroom and not an entertainment room at that time. So step number two is what I call honoring the sacredness of the bedroom. How's your space in that regard?
Actually, really well. I actually hide my TV in my closet.
Sweet! Closeted TV watcher.
Yeah, well, actually, and I don't even watch it, so I'm really thinking of just getting rid of it because I don't even watch it. But I do have an altar in there.
Right.
My bed, and that's, it's very kind of empty, actually. It's okay. Very simple. I don't have a lot in there, actually.
Okay. Well, that's perfectly fine. And altars are fine too, because it brings in the spirituality into a relationship, which is often something that we want to have a relationship grounded in, is our spirituality. So that's very positive. Well, let me go on to number three then. So the third tip for manifesting a relationship is to think in terms of pairs, because a relationship is a pair of people. Now, if I go into a person's home and they have a single nightstand with a single lamp and a single candle and a single piece of art or a couple of pieces of art with all single items on them, it just reinforces again and again and again the idea of being single. Whereas the idea that we want to create in a partnership is to have pairs of things. So ideally there would be two nightstands with two bedside lamps. And if there's a candle, there'd be two candles. And if there's a piece of artwork, it has an image of two things in it, or there's an or there's just two pieces of art in the room, so that everything in the room is constantly reminding the psyche of the idea of partnership. And, you know, I like to emphasize this for people that don't even want relationships, because it's important to acknowledge the masculine and the feminine side of our own self, the yin and the yang, the active and the passive. And by having two items represented, it allows that expression in ourselves. It enables us to see the two sides of our own being and to have that own partnership within ourselves as we go forward. So, you know, I like to say, if you can, put everything in pairs in your bedroom. Just have two of everything. And if a person has a preference to have more of a threesome or something like that, you can also create that reality too by having threes. The number three represents change, because it throws off the stability of two. So three is constantly throwing two into a little whirlwind. So by having three candles or three pictures or an image of three in the bedroom, it's going to keep the relationships in a constant state of change, which, I don't know, teenagers can probably handle a lot better than I could. And, you know, I have one client who, she basically wanted a hism. Not a harem, she wanted a hism. And she basically just had a whole host of candles that she keeps lit for all of the many lovers that she intends. And, you know, I don't want to say that you have to create a pairing, but the idea of having two bedside tables and two lamps, it's the idea of creating that foundational 1-2 step of yin and yang in our own style, so that we can create the partnerships in our outer life as well. Does that make sense?
Makes sense, and I do have two lights and two end tables, so.
Fabulous. Well, let's take it to the next level. What a lot of people don't realize when they get the nightstands and lights is that the equality can matter. So if a person has a really tall lamp on one side and a really short lamp on the other, or a really tall table on one side and short table on the other, or small and big or whatever, it creates an energetic inequality between the two, so that... Like, I had a client who she had on her side of the table, on her side of the bed, she had a really big table and a really big lamp, and she had everything there. And then on the other side of the bed, she had a small table with a little tiny night thing and a night lamp. And her complaint to me was that the guys that she dates never stay in her life. And I was like, well, that's because they come into this space and they see that they have a very small place. They don't have the same amount of opening as they could have if there was some equality in the two sides. So having equally sized lamps and equally bright lamps and equally sized tables creates a further equality in the idea of the pairing. So... how's that?
They're identical.
Identical is great. So then the last thing is just to make sure that the bed, and this is the next point, is the positioning of the bed. The position of the bed needs to be with the headboard or the head of the bed against a solid wall. And the reason being is that the headboard represents the stability of a relationship. The stronger and the more sturdy the headboard, it impacts or creates the foundation for a really sturdy and stable relationship. If there is no headboard, it's still okay to push the bed up against the wall so that the whole wall becomes the headboard and becomes the stable representation. Some people put their beds in front of a window, which I really don't advise. I realize that there's some rooms that don't offer a different solution for that. In that case, it's really important to have a very strong and stable headboard. But without it, what's basically happening is the energy of the relationship is going out the window, and literally the partner can just go right out the window. So these are people that end up in relationships that just go really fast in and out, right out the way.
I was going to say, in some cases, that might be good. The thing I also, what about the position in the sense of direction?
You know, there are different schools of feng shui, and the school that I follow is the westernized version. So we don't use compass directions necessarily, and we don't take into account a person's birth year and time of date in the astrological charts. What we use is what's called a command position. The position of the bed ideally is opposite or in a way that they can, when you're laying in bed, you can see the entrance of the room without having to move your head. That way you'll never be startled by something coming into the bed, into the bedroom. If you can see the door easily. Does that make sense?
Makes sense. Well, it's kind of like in any room, you want to be able to see the entrance.
Right. You want to be, it's called the command position. So right. That's the first thing, is just having the command position for the bed. And then in terms of which direction it faces, it doesn't matter as long as the head has a headboard or against a solid wall, and that the you can see the door easily. Now, getting into a little more of the finer details, we don't want what's called a coffin position, and this comes from the idea that, you know, when in China, when a person passes away, they carry the person out of the room feet first. So it's not good to have the feet going right into the doorway. So we don't, if you have the door at the foot of the bed, you want to make sure that it's to the right of the bed and not right at the foot of the bed, so that you're literally feet going right out the door. That's called the coffin position. It's an unhealthy position to be in, because the energy coming in the door can really disrupt your sleep and upset your body. Whenever you look at the entrance of any room or any space, it's called the mouth of qi. So when we're looking at the bedroom door opens, the entrance, you go in the entrance, that's the mouth of qi, and you want that mouth of qi to be clear from one side of the room pretty much to the other side of the room without hitting the bed. If it hits the bed in any way, that energy is going to be cutting the bed and creating an energetic imbalance in the body itself. I had a client who had the bed positioned so that the door would open and the mouth of qi would literally cut across about a little bit around where the knees are on the bed. And ironically, this client was telling me that his chief complaint was that he was having knee problems.
Wow.
Yeah, he had begun having knee problems when he started living in this house. So what we did to fix that, because we couldn't move the bed, is we hung a crystal faceted sphere right over the entrance of the door, so that the energy coming in from the mouth of qi would actually be dispersed around the room and not slice the bed right at the knees. Ideal situation, though, is that there's the mouth of qi does not hit the bed in any way.
Well, in my bedroom, the mouth of qi, I have an outside door and then the in from the inside, and it's right in alignment. So the qi is like going right out the door.
You know, it's kind of a straight shot. Basically, it goes in one door and out the other. And what you'll want to do to disperse and move the energy around, first thing is if you can place something live, like a plant, somewhere along that line that kind of juts into that qi shot a little bit, it will help to disperse the energy. The second thing is if you have, you know, you can use chimes, you can use lighting, you can use bells, you can use crystals, whatever you want, something that's going to pretty much break up that straight shot so the energy coming in one door doesn't go right out the other door. I know a lot of people will place like a chair or two chairs right along there so that the energy has to curve around the chairs in order to continue out to get to the other door. That's a situation that can happen in any room in the house. But in the bedroom, that kind of a situation would signify a relationship that just basically comes in and out really fast so that there's not a lot of long-term possibility or potential in that without the qi being broken up. I imagine that you probably have your altar somewhere between the two, or no?
Originally I did. I had it against the wall to break it up, but now it's on the opposite wall. So I'll have to move it back.
Yeah, I would move it back, and I don't know if you meditate in front of your altar, or do you?
I generally meditate more sitting in the chair in the room that I have. Well, actually, it's a bench, or on my bed.
Okay. Because one idea, again, reinforcing the idea of pairs, would be to put like two meditation pillows in front of the altar to give the idea of you and your partner jointly going into a very spiritual space in your bedroom and creating that kind of space. Do you have one chair or two chairs? Oh, you said it's a bench. You have a bench in here?
Actually, there's two benches. It's like there's a bench that goes that I have in front of the altar, and then another one against a different wall. They're not really sitting together, though.
They don't have to sit together, but it's ideal that you have two, because that way it energetically gives the space for whomever comes into your life to have a place to sit down and take off their shoes or whatever they need to do, giving them that same thing. It's ideal. So, good job.
Okay.
And then the last thing I was going to say about the beds, and we could talk about beds all night, but I call it the teddy bear test. When you look at your bed, you want to get the feeling of getting hugged by a teddy bear. So we want soft corners, we want rounded edges, we want smooth lines rather than hard finishes or stark, sharp corners, because the sharper the corner, the sharper the energy that's bouncing off of that. And the more smooth the corners, the more sensual the energy. So in a bedroom that has a lot of rounded corners and rounded sides, a person is naturally going to feel more capable of letting down their guard and opening up emotionally and physically to whomever else is in the room with them. Whereas a room that has a lot of straight lines or sharp corners is going to put the person a little bit more on edge energetically, and they're not going to be able to relax and be able to be as playful and fun and open in that situation. Things you can do to remedy sharp corners would be to put fabric over them, or to put extra pillows around, or throw the blanket over that part of it so that the sharp corner is no longer pointing out into the room.
Excellent. I do want to mention, if anybody wants to call in and have questions, you're welcome to call in. The number is 888-815-9756. If you got a question for Salvador on feng shui, you are welcome to call in at any time. Because of good old Mercury, we are going to be going past 10 o'clock for a few minutes, so don't feel like, oh, well, there's no time. We've got plenty of time, so if you do have questions, please feel free to come in and ask Salvador, this wonderful consultant of feng shui. You've got your chance to, if there's a situation or a room you need some suggestions, please, really, you have plenty of time to call in. And let's talk a little bit real quick just to talk about your website. What can people find on your website?
My website, I have a blog, and on my blog I give feng shui tips. Every week I put up a new feng shui tip that anyone can apply to their house and start using. This week's tip was about how to move forward, or creating them forward-moving energy in their life. And the tip for that is, one really fun feng shui tip is to move 27 items in your space. 27 is a key number in feng shui because it is the number 9, which represents completion, and the number 3, which represents change. So 27 represents a complete change. So moving 27 objects, and it doesn't have to be the bed and the TV and major pieces, but you can move 27 small objects in the space. And what that does is it breaks up the energy. It breaks up a lot of the stagnant places so that you start creating that forward motion in your life all along. In addition to the blog and the tips, I have regular articles that go up about twice a month that go into more in-depth about topics that they can find. I also have all of my events listed, where I'm going to be or when I'm going to be talking on the radio, such as tonight. And also have ways of getting a hold of me. And if you want to ask specific questions, or if you'd like to host a workshop in your community. So I'll be doing a workshop in New York City in May, on May 6th. And I'll be doing my next one here in San Francisco on June 6th, and then I'll be back in Los Angeles probably in August or in September as well. So we'll keep updating on those.
And what is, I mean, you would be wonderful to have as for a workshop because you do wonderful work. So when is your next, like, book signing or your next little talk that you're having in the San Francisco area or California, wherever? Is the next time, like, in New York for the workshop, or are you going to be setting up a book signing back there as well?
Well, I'd love to do a book signing if you know, or if anybody would like to get me into a place to do a book signing, I'm happy to do that. But right now I'm going to be doing a workshop, Feng Shui Life Mapping Workshop in New York City. And more information about that will be on my website in the coming days. My next workshop here in San Francisco is June 6th, and it's going to be kicking off the summer. It's going to be called Summer Loving, and it's going to be Feng Shui tips to ignite the love of life. And we'll be going over the five principles to manifest anything you desire in your life. We'll be looking at the Feng Shui secret formula to life, which helps a person identify where the energy is at any given moment and what they can do to move that energy forward. And then we'll be creating a vision board built on top of a Feng Shui Bagua, and this is called a life map that they can then use to go home and actually start Feng Shuiing their place, use it as a blueprint to go around and Feng Shui their place. So that'll be Monday, June 6th at 7 p.m. here in San Francisco. And additional workshops will be announced on the workshop as they're actually planned.
Excellent. Now, you've studied a lot of different kind of modalities like shamanism.
Yeah.
Do you use any of that wisdom within the feng shui?
Yes. There's, you know, my practice is called Feng Shui Life Mapping because I want to take it outside of just the generic term, or the, not generic, but just the art of feng shui using the Chinese formulas. What I use a lot of the understanding of the plant energies, what kind of plants bring what kind of energy into a space, or what kind of plants represent what energies in terms of our life. You know, rosemary is a protective, lavender is protective, jasmine is very romantic and alive. And I also work with the energy of crystals. I don't do crystal healings per se, but I do understand the energetic properties that are related to various crystals. And every crystal has kind of what I call its own purpose. So each little crystal that comes into our life comes into our life for a purpose, whether it's to give us insight or direct us in a specific direction. But placing those crystals in key places within the terms of feng shui allows the energetic vibration of that crystal to go even stronger throughout our life. So I use that. And then I use a lot of shamanism and Native American practices in terms of clearing energies and creating a grounded energy for a person within their space, doing different rituals and ceremonies. And then, of course, there's also house blessings, how to bless the house and bring in new energies and new life, and to welcome the person to their space, or even just welcome the changes that come from moving furniture or moving artwork around the space as well. So it does incorporate a lot of the different teachings that I've had over the last 10 years, from Taoism to shamanism to spirituality and feng shui.
Okay, so you mentioned that jasmine was very romantic. Is there any other plants that you would suggest for bringing that relationship in your life, as well as what crystal? Like the rose crystal is always considered a love crystal. Is there other crystals or gems or plants that would really emphasize like the bedroom or bringing in a little more pizzazz in the romance area?
Well, to bring in pizzazz is very specific, but to, and I'll get to that. Let me answer it more generally. The rose crystal represents opening the heart chakra. So, as you mentioned, it's associated with heart. So, anything of a rose nature or the rosy quartz or a pink nature is going to have an energetic effect on the heart and opening of the heart. So, we can have a lot of fun with opening that up. In terms of plants, any plants that have a pink flower is going to automatically affect our hearts. One of the best is tulips. Tulips have a very, has a very gentle nature to it, a very soft and soothing side of it. It opens up magnificently, and as it does so, it kind of bends and flows into whatever direction it feels like it wants to, rather than a solid, stock, stiff one. Basically, in terms of plants that support relationships, you want anything that's going to be soft, anything that's going to have rounded leaves is going to be supportive of a relationship, whereas things that are spiky or pointed are going to, again, cause a little more friction or a little more drawing the lines. And those are better in places like your fame or your reputation area, because you want to have a very stable and strict reputation. So you can have those kind of items there. But in the relationship, I would choose, you know, item out of flowers that are either pink or white, and plants that have leaves that are soft, rounded, maybe even a little furry or that kind of stuff. Like, I love rubber plants personally, because rubber plants are so bendy and flexible, and you can play with them, and they just, every time I see one, I want to go up to it and just kind of shake it, because it just seems like it's so much fun to bounce it around and that kind of thing. Other, lavender is a very sensual smell as well. Jasmine is probably the most sensual of all of them, and Ling Ling is also a very romantic, inspiring. So the second part of your question was about how to, ignite some spark and some pizzazz. That's going into the reds. So red is a very powerful color, and we often think of the red rose as representing love. It's just such a very vibrant, bold color. It's going to add a lot of pizzazz to wherever it is. A lot of people ask me if they should have red sheets, and I can't. I mean, if you want to have a really active bed life, that would be an ideal situation. But outside of that situation, red sheets are going to be a little bit too much energy for a bed itself, because that's a place you want to rest. I choose to use red sparingly, and even in ways that can be taken out of the room if I need to. So, like having red flowers, or having a red pillow that can be pulled away, or having a red piece of art that can be offset by other pieces that are not so bold and bright. Lastly, I would add fire. Any kind of fire energy is going to spark up the romance and spark up the passion in a relationship. So if you can get two candles, the bigger the better, and have them lit and going really boldly. Or you could also bring in fire with a light, like a lava lamp. Wow, that's a very, because it also has that flowy side to it too. So anything that's going to have red or fire is going to add pizzazz and passion to a relationship. The one thing you want to avoid in the bedroom is water, barring the lava lamp has some water in it. But water, like a fountain or like an aquarium, it's not an ideal place, because when we think of water, we think of the emotional quality of water. It has a very intense and deep emotional aspect on the life. On our life. So having water in the bedroom or in the relationship area, it adds an intense emotional quality to our relationships, which can sometimes be a little too much processing, or a little bit too much emotion, rather than being able to move forward and move through the relationship.
How's this? It sounds great. A question that just popped in my head is, and this is like a little bit out there, but it's often said to be lovingly detached, not to attach to anything, really. Any suggestions with feng shui to really help you be very present and grounded and not too attached to anything?
Wow, that is pretty awesome. You know, in terms of relationships, I would want to go outside of that because I think it's walking a fine line of how to be within the relationship and still be unattached to the expectations.
But right.
The way that you would create the energetic feeling of an unattached would be to have something that would be free-flowing, like a mobile or some feathers that are hanging or some one of those kinetic energy, those moving objects that kind of stay in motion the whole time. Something like that is going to emphasize to the mind and to the psyche the ability to always be in the flow of things. In terms of where I would put that in your, I think you called it your pool room or your living room.
Right.
Because, and that's a great place to put it. I mean, you have a pool table, right? It's,
right.
It's fun and it's constantly in motion and all that flowing because it represents our ability to keep moving from the experiences that we're having and moving into the next one. So, that would be the ideal place to have something of that nature.
Excellent. And in the pool room, which was the living room, the formal living room that I just switched it into a pool room, you said that was my skill. And to play pool, it does take some skill.
Yep.
So I thought it was very interesting that I actually got the pool table when I was doing my shamanic practice when I first was starting it to help me with focus.
Wow. That's awesome. Yeah, it's the every time you would go in there, it would help you to hone in and create that sort of single-pointed focus. And that's awesome. What a great reinforcement of your intention. And every time you go in there and play, you're not only you're bringing that focus, but you're also bringing playfulness to it as well, keeping it fun.
Yeah. And when I was connecting to Otter, I went and played pool. Out of the house, but I went and played pool because it was fun and it was a great time. But that's the way I connected with the Otter.
What is the Otter? I'm not sure.
Otter is playfulness. It's connecting with your inner child.
Right. I understand what you mean. The animal. Cool. Yeah.
Yeah, the animal. It's very interesting. A lot of people who do shamanic think of the stones and the herbs and nature, the plants and all. But when I was doing it, it was more connecting with the animals and the plants and then the rocks. So it's just like, for me, I attract a lot of different animals and I pay attention. They definitely are messengers for me. They are things I need to pay attention to.
Yeah.
So it's like I'll get hawks around me and owls and ravens and coyote and bobcat, lots of rabbits and quails and stuff. And I even have two ducks that come in my pool. So, and the wild ducks and they come and go and it's beautiful, but it always reminds me, just let it roll off your back. Don't get too attached, but they're also the emotion, playground. I mean, they're very playful and all, but they're in the water, but they're also on ground, and it's a very balanced energy. So it's interesting. I really suggest, you might agree, just doing a basic class in shamanic practice and really understanding the different energies of the plants and the animals and the gems, it really just really, number one, grounds me on this planet.
Yeah.
But it really focuses me and a greater appreciation of the oneness because it really makes me feel like I am attached and part of the oneness by understanding the energy of all these different items and objects and entities that we're sharing the space with.
Yeah, yeah. Have you studied the animal cards or animal wisdoms?
Yep, yeah. Yeah, one of my first guests actually on the show was Ted Andrews.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
He was one of my first guests, and I actually had done a workshop with him and got to meet him face to face.
Wow.
And had a conversation with him. And I told him a few stories about my connection with animals. Like, I went up to the White Mountains in Arizona, and a wolf came into my camp.
Wow.
And at that time, there were no wolves in Arizona.
Wow.
And it's just like, it was very interesting. And he just stared at me. And that was the sign that my primary power animal for me is wolf, which is the teacher. So it was very fitting. And he just stared at me. I mean, I had two dogs going nuts.
Yeah.
I had one that was tied up. She actually broke the rope and chased the wolf.
Oh, no.
And she was fine. But I went after the wolf. I followed the wolf. So that was letting them know I was really aware that I was supposed to be with that wolf. And it was amazing. And he was very surprised by that, but he was also, you're right on track. And it was a wonderful workshop, and one of those things that you put out there to the universe, I want to meet this person, and I was able to. And hearing of his death was just like, wow. Icon is gone in many ways, so.
Yeah. That's beautiful. Yeah, have you ever done a vision quest?
Yes.
Yeah. I had a vision quest once, and the animals were all just coming around and giving me messages the whole time I was on the quest. It was wild. But like you said, hawks, and I had a rattlesnake that came by. And
oh, cool.
Bear. Yeah.
And so where did you did yours? In Northern California?
Yeah, I did it in Northern California in the Sierra Nevada mountains.
Yeah.
Native American shaman.
I did mine. The last one that I did was up in Sedona.
Oh, wow. So was it mostly, it's a desertscape then, right?
It was desert with all the red rocks, and I actually had a raven that was hovering over me.
Wow, magic.
Magic and omens and protection, and let's go to the other side.
Yeah.
And raven, the other thing is when I also did raven, it also is facing your fears.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And it's a really really powerful animal to say, let's go to the shadows and to the dreamscape and see what we can handle and help you. It really is a powerful. So if you do visualization, asking the raven to help you with the magic of your vision is not a bad thing to do.
Yeah. And raven carries the energy of healing to whoever you want to send it to as well, right?
Right. So it's a very powerful animal for me. I get them around me quite a bit. So it's one of my totems as well. So what is your power animal?
You know, that's really good. My power animal is the frog. It brings rebirth, recreation.
Yep.
And the butterfly.
Ooh, wow, transformation.
Metamorphosis and transformation,
yeah.
Going through, and I really feel like I'm in a moment right now where it's like going through that point of accepting life in a state of chaos with the knowledge that the outcome is really going to be so much better. You know that quote that Atabro thought it was the end of the world, and then he became a butterfly. It's just like being able to let go and go through that place of chaos to get to the metamorphosis of what you can be and the potential. And I find that so often with feng shui is that I'll work with somebody's house or, you know, they'll say, I want to really get my career going, and we'll do the feng shui of the room, and all of a sudden the person finds the job, gets the promotion, their career really takes place, but it's still just the first step, you know. It's like finally putting fixing the dam so that they're not leaking energy anymore. But
right.
The truth is that there needs to be a complete expansion. and the ability to go through the chaos for them to really find their life's work, their life's purpose, and to take their career to the next level and to really start achieving what they've come to this life to achieve. And it's fun. It's fun to work with people that actually are courageous enough to go there and to start really shaking the foundations of what they have and think of to go to those places.
So speaking of career and getting a job, and as a psychic, I get a lot of those questions of, when am I getting the new job? What is my financial situation? Is it going to improve? Is there anything in feng shui to really help with the financial situation? Any quick tips that you can give real quick? Or is there something within the home that they really need to look at to really bring that new job, that new career, that expansion?
You know, there's a couple of different answers there. If a person's looking for a new job, my advice is to look at the entrance of their house. Make sure that the address is visible. Make sure that the doorbell works. Make sure that the welcome mat is a welcome mat. That welcomes energy into their specific career area. What I like to recommend people do is write up the job description of their ideal job, frame it, and put it next to their front door, so that they are literally opening the door to that new reality that they wish to have in their job. In terms of creating financial abundance in the house, there's so many, 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 many different kinds of feng shui. We could do another show just on that. One tip that I like to tell people, though, is to get a $50 bill or a $100 bill, put it in an envelope, and put it in your freezer. And that way you always have cold, hard cash available at any time you need it. It sounds kind of gimmicky, but it literally creates the psychic energetic foundation for a person to know that at any given moment they can go and they can pull out that cold hard cash and start using it for whatever they want to do. But I've had people that I had a woman that made a mobile using different denominations of bills, and she ended up coming into a lot of money shortly after that.
What room did she put that in? Her wealth room?
She put it in her wealth quadrant of the main room. So it doesn't, like you said, that your bedroom is actually the wealth quadrant, the far
yeah.
You know, anything purple represents wealth or gold. So a feng shui trick that people like to use is to get 99 gold coins, like $1 bills or $1 coins, and put them in a little treasure chest and put them in the wealth area of the house with the intention of it bringing into one's life a whole vast array of abundance, financial and otherwise. And setting, the more clear the intention is of what it is that the person wants to manifest, whether it's $15,000 or a new car or a new trainer or whatever they're looking for in their life, having that intention when they put that in the treasure box and then putting it in that corner will help to energetically create the movement towards that reality in their life as well.
Excellent. Now, something that I did was I got $1 million bills.
Awesome.
And I actually have, I got paid in cash, so I took a picture of $100 bills, and that's my screensaver. So every time I go in to my computer, I see, you know, thousands of dollars in $100 bills.
Fabulous. I love it.
So with the other thing I do is I hold the $1 million and I say, I see, feel, and receive the infinite abundance and prosperity of the universe. So I'm feeling and seeing the $1 million bills.
Yeah. Coming, yeah, that's beautiful.
Very simple things. And since I really started doing that, money is flowing more. It's kind of interesting. Just very simple things can shift the energy quite a lot.
And I like what you're saying because a lot of what I do is I create the physical reality or the physical representation of what the person wishes to create. But in order for it to really like take root and take off, it requires that feeling, that person feeling the energy and feeling the passion of what it is they wish to create and attaching that feeling with that visualization in order to start the energetic process of creating that in their life. So your tip there of like saying, I see, hear, feel the money coming to me with ease, that's beautiful. That's exactly what we want to do.
Yeah, I make sure to say receive.
And receive.
I'm open to receive, you know, this millions of dollars that I'm holding. I know they're in my energy field and I'm aligning to them now.
Perfect. That's beautiful.
It's a really simple tip, and I do want to thank Linda Miller, who is on Facebook. She is a wonderful person to connect with. She is very, very giving with a few little tips on manifestation and law of attraction as well. So, and that's something else that with the feng shui that you're really doing is the law of attraction.
Yeah, it's all about the law of attraction. It's all about activating that reality in our own lives and creating the energetic reality in our external lives. So, yeah. Most of my workshops focus on the law of attraction and how to practice it, activate it, and start working with it, debunking the myths and using it playfully and successfully in our lives.
And with that, I actually think that is a wonderful time to end the show because that is what you do. Again, your website is fengshuilifemapping.com. Salvador Muncy is on Facebook as well. He has wonderful little sayings on there that I do my best to reply to. He asks some great questions. So again, Salvador, I thank you again, and we will have you on again just on manifesting wealth because that is something with this economy. A lot of people are saying, okay, what do I need to do to correct the situation? So I'm definitely going to be having you on again really soon if you're open to it.
I'd love to. Love to. Oh, thank you so much for having me tonight too.
Like I said, open invitation anytime. So I thank you very much. And this is Jennifer Hellman saying, with each breath of air, we hope you find and gain new inspirations and insights into your daily life. With many blessings to you. Until next time, this is Jennifer Hellman saying good night, many blessings, and have a wonderful weekend.